You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yesterday, National MP Andrew Falloon announced his resignation from politics, citing poor mental health. Later that day, RNZ Newsroom broke that Falloon had sent a sexually explicit photo, not of himself, to a teenager. Her parents referred it to Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern's office, who then forwarded it to newly appointed Leader of the Opposition, Judith Collins. Prior to this information being made public, Collins stated in a press release that Falloon, quote, is suffering from significant mental health issues and his privacy must be respected. Also released yesterday were new details on allegations against independent MP Jamie Lee Ross. Newsroom reports that a former staffer for his botany office was told by the Parliamentary Service to return to working with Ross after she reported that he had made lewd comments about her. She says this made her feel unsafe and was furious that the response was to suggest that she, quote, go back into a room with a predator. She was furious at the injustice of being left unemployed while her harasser maintains his position. This brings the total number of complainants against Ross to 10. In 2018, Newsroom published an expose against the MP, detailing staffers' experiences of sexual harassment and assault at the hands of their boss. One woman said Ross applied consistent and repeated pressure on her, and recounted her experience of his controlling behavior, incoherent rages, and brutal sex. Other staff members have reported their complaints to Parliamentary Service, also being swept under the rug. New Zealand has a Me Too problem. From claims being covered up and buried by leadership, to the lack of redress available for victims, sexual harassment is systemic. Perpetrators escape accountability. Falloon's claim that his real reason for resignation was his mental health rather than incoming scandal was upheld by his party's leadership, and when the story broke, he pushed the blame for the messages onto others, namely his drunk friend. Ross has a history of allegations against him, and his probable ousting at this election will not be due to outrage over his abusive behaviour, but rather because he has been ousted from the National Party for unrelated political scandals. That young female staffers continue to be assigned to Lee indicates that this problem extends beyond the National Party, implicating Parliament as a whole. The Parliamentary Service's non-response to complainants only adds to this. Youth Wings of Labour and ACT have also been mired in their own sexual harassment and assault scandals. While the power dynamics present in national scandal are not present in these cases, that the people who will eventually occupy these positions of power accept some level of harassment as normal informs New Zealand's political culture as a whole. A 2019 survey from Inside Parliament shows over half of female MPs report being targets of sexism and harassment. 86% did not know where to go for help, or decided to just put up with it. Reporting systems are inadequate not only for staffers, but for MPs too. The culture of Parliament is such that it puts women off political involvement, compounding the issue. In two cases in the survey, women decided not to seek re-election because of the extent of the problem. The Human Rights Commission has criticised the government's lack of a national response to sexual harassment and have been calling for a national inquiry. But in light of lawmakers themselves being implicated by Me Too, or at the very least complicit, this is little surprise. I spoke to Lisa Lawrence, President for National Council of Women of New Zealand, about sexual harassment in politics and in New Zealand generally. Why is sexual harassment such a pervasive problem in politics?
Yeah, unfortunately, New Zealand politics reflects the New Zealand community. So where there are places where there are power imbalances, you're going to see that amplified within the political sphere. Unfortunately, sometimes people think ego is what it takes to be staying within the political arena. But what it actually takes is brains and kindness.
Most politicians come from a legal background, which was abound in its own Me Too scandals, such as the Russell McVeigh scandal a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many gender stereotypes that unfortunately some professions seem to still reflect and fall into. So people still have this assumption that most lawyers are male and that most lawyers need to be quite brutal and dogged in their way forward in their workplace. and that's reflected in their relationships with their work colleagues. So we've got gender stereotypes that sit within the legal profession that therefore people still play into, and they do it with such damaging consequences, mainly for women.
And unfortunately, sexual harassment is a problem for women generally, outside of legal and political spheres as well. Why is this such a common problem?
Yeah, look, that's such a great question, and it's fascinating that in the 21st century, a person's gender still has such a pivotal outcome on their life experiences. So we know that women are more likely to experience unwanted sexual harassment and sexual touching over their lifetime. And it's just a biggest belief that here in the 21st century, a person's gender can have such a profound impact in that particular way. I think that I have a hunch that New Zealand is still stuck in some very old fashioned expectations of what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman, and that they're very binary in how they're sort of viewed. And because we've grown up with these kinds of thoughts and ideas about gender stereotypes, we don't actually, we're not consciously always aware of when we're playing into them. So women often feel that they're not able to speak up when things are said that are offensive. And men, is a very general stereotype, will feel that they are meant to, or they're entitled to, mistreat other people as a way of gaining validity within their community or within their family group.
What impacts does such harassment have on victims?
Yeah, so the people that experience harassment, it's incredibly disempowering. And if that's a regular part of their life, if their community is a place or their workplace happens to be somewhere where they experience harassment on a daily or a weekly sort of occurrence, it's really hard not to internalise that as something that is somehow warranted. So there can be a real internal turmoil. It can erode people's senses of self-worth. The statistics in New Zealand for family violence, for suicide and for mental health distress are massive. And we would be foolish to look past our daily treatment of each other, and that doesn't have an impact on these really personal areas and levels of distress.
Do you think that sort of lower levels of this phenomenon, like sexual harassment, inform a wider culture that enables things like repeated assaults and abuse over years?
Yeah, so you may have heard of a rape culture, which is that's where, and it's sort of a triangle. If you ever were to look it up on Google, you'd find that it's represented by an image of a triangle, and the varying levels and degree of harm and how overt or covert those levels of harm are, and if they're perpetuated by society as an everyday occurrence at a low level, or if they're sort of more specific and they're individualised and quite overtly harmful. And low-level everyday exposure to harassment, to bullying, to sexist comments, to racist comments, it only serves to disempower everybody. It disempowers the person who it's perpetuated against, be it a stereotype or be it an individual. And it also harms the person who actually is doing it, because it limits their ways of relating to people. It will be a disconnector. Every power imbalance in life ends up becoming a disconnector of relationships. And I think that that's what we're seeing in New Zealand now, is the importance of that we stay connected and that we stay centred on how we treat each other right.
Bringing us back to politics, what impact does the culture of sexual harassment in Parliament have on women's participation in politics?
Yeah, really good question. I do think that a lot of New Zealanders look to our parliamentary sector and how they treat each other, and they wonder why on earth would anybody willingly go into a place that seems so brutal and doesn't treat people with the basic human decency that we would expect. I think it's a very polarising place, and that women are unfortunately, I think that it's been a great discourager for many years, simply the hostility of that particular workplace. And because, especially now in the 21st century, it's all extremely visible. So because we've got access to technology, we've got access to phones in terms of videoing and recording, there is such a less opportunity for it to be as covert as it was back in the 80s and the 90s when our technology didn't capture the bullying, didn't capture the harassment. So I think for women that there is still a hesitation to step forward. Thankfully, as you would have seen in the last 3 to 5 years, the gender balance in our parliament is improving massively, and therefore these insidious behaviours are far less tolerated because there are far more people observing and saying, hey, that's not okay, and we are going to respond to what you're doing.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.